You're listening to Asia First Weekend Edition with me, Justine Moss. Crossing now, as usual, to our US Bureau Chief in Washington, D.C., Simon Marks. Hi, Simon.
Hello, Justine.
Thanks again for joining us here in Singapore. Now, let's get to, firstly, to the latest from the campaign trail. President Trump in Florida, Biden, I believe, in Pennsylvania, Obama in Florida as well. And so many more people have voted since we last spoke yesterday.
Yes, absolutely. The numbers of voting of voters rising precipitously by the day and by the hour. I think we're now above 58 million people who have participated in this election all over the country, with early voting now underway everywhere. And among those people to vote early has now been the President of the United States, Donald Trump, who voted today in West Palm Beach, Florida, showing up at a polling station this morning. That's all a bit unexpected. I mean, we heard last night the president saying that he was planning to vote today, but until recently, the White House had insisted that both President Trump and the First Lady were going to use postal votes, that they didn't think they could be in Florida on Election Day, and so they had registered for postal votes, and lo and behold, the president decided that he would participate in early voting. He says, of course, that he voted for himself and that he voted for Republican candidates up and down the ticket in Florida, the state that he now calls home after officially switching his residence from New York to Florida several months ago. The First Lady, Melania Trump, did not vote with him. She didn't travel to the polling station. And reporters asked the president when she plans to vote, and they didn't get an answer. So it's not clear whether that might happen on a subsequent trip to Florida, or whether she is going ahead with those postal votes. Remember that Donald Trump has been very critical publicly of postal voting, arguing that it is open to fraud, that Democrats are trying to use it to steal the election. So it was always something of an oddity, given that he was advancing those unsubstantiated claims, that he might himself choose to vote by post. So maybe that's one of the reasons why he decided not to do it. On the campaign trail over the last few hours, in Florida and then again in North Carolina, he has raised eyebrows by articulating very openly that he believes far too much attention in the United States is being paid to COVID-19 and to the record number of new infections that the U.S. recorded again on Friday, more than 80,000 new infections in one day. The president told a crowd today, COVID, 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 it's all the media talks about. He claimed that a plane could crash and 500 people could die, and the media would ignore it because all they want to talk about is the growing number of cases. He insists that that is a false narrative because COVID-19 can be successfully fought by so many younger Americans who test positive for it. And he clearly indicated that this is no longer a topic that he believes is worthy of being a dominant issue in the election campaign. Joe Biden, by contrast, seized upon that in his rally appearances and in his speeches, telling voters that this is all illustrative of a president of the United States who has never taken the pandemic seriously, who bears responsibility for the deaths of now almost 225,000 Americans, and who has no plan to mitigate COVID-19 on a national level going forward, and indeed doesn't really seem to believe that it's a particular problem that the United States needs to deal with. So Democrats, I think, look at President Trump's behavior over the last few hours and think that he is playing absolutely into their hands. And certainly what we're witnessing here is a very different presentation by the president than what we witnessed in that second television debate on Thursday night. As we discussed yesterday morning, you know, he was much more disciplined, much more focused in that debate than we had previously seen, either in a debate format or on the campaign trail. And I think to the concern of Republican leaders, particularly in the Senate, he has simply reverted to type on the campaign trail on Saturday here, and they worry that that is going to play into the Democrats' hands in the last full week of this election campaign.
Simon, other news out of the US is that President Trump's daughter Ivanka and his son-in-law Jared Kushner have now threatened to sue the Lincoln Project over a Times Square billboards in New York City. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, I think it's probably important just to explain what the Lincoln Project is, because it has become a major factor in this election campaign. It's named after Abraham Lincoln, the Republican president who freed America's slaves at the end of the Civil War. And as the name of the organization suggests, it is made up of traditional center-leaning Republicans who do not approve of the lurch to the right that the party has taken under President Donald Trump. Many of them are conservatives, by the way, core conservatives, who still think that Donald Trump's rightward lurch has dragged the party away from some of the traditional issues that it has always espoused, and the traditional responsibility that it has always exercised on the political scene here. I mean, one of the questions that people who support the Lincoln Project ask is, why did Donald Trump not take COVID-19 seriously? There's nothing inherently Republican about dismissing a pandemic as a hoax and saying, as the president has within the last few hours, that it will simply go away. There's nothing inherently Republican or even conservative about that approach to public health. And so the Lincoln Project has become a thorn in Donald Trump's side, not least because in the third quarter of this year alone, it raised more than $39 million to fund activities, which include booking massive billboards in Times Square decrying Ivanka Trump, the president's daughter, and the president's son-in-law, her husband, Jared Kushner, saying that in a meeting earlier in the year, Jared Kushner turned on the governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo, and said that Cuomo didn't pound the phones hard enough to get personal protective equipment for his state. His people are going to suffer, and that's their problem. And these billboards, and that quote, by the way, has never been substantiated, never verified. And Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner insist that essentially they're being libeled and slandered in this advertising campaign, which is designed to convey to the people of New York that two of the president's closest relatives simply don't care about the people living in that city and that state. So they are threatening legal action against the Lincoln Project to get those billboards taken down. The Lincoln Project are saying absolutely no way. The billboards stay up. They've got a First Amendment right to express their views. And the ball is now back in Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner's court. And I think it'll be very interesting to see whether they do actually follow through with that threat to take legal action against the group. It'll be a difficult decision for them to make, because in some ways they'll be playing into the hands of the Lincoln Project and conveying a kind of legitimacy on this political it's not quite a political action committee, but it's certainly a very much an active player on the political stage here. And you know, it might not be that sensible to shine more of a spotlight on what the Lincoln Project is saying about Donald Trump as we head towards Election Day.
It'll be interesting to see what happens. You're listening to Asia First Weekend Edition. Me, Justine Moss, and I'm speaking with Simon Marks, our US Bureau Chief in Washington, D.C. Simon, let's just visit those coronavirus case numbers again. You know, they continue to surge in the US, huge numbers this week. Dr. Anthony Fauci now saying it might be time to mandate masks.
Yes. Well, Dr. Fauci, of course, has been saying that for many months. He's argued that Americans need to be told to wear face masks and that perhaps a national mandate is needed. I mean, what Dr. Fauci is saying as he looks at these numbers that are desperate. I mean, 80,000 new cases of infection in a single day on Friday, 77,000 the day before that, the death toll heading towards 225,000, intensive care unit beds filling up rapidly all over the country. And Dr. Fauci revealing that the president's own White House coronavirus task force has met very irregularly, and that President Trump hasn't been in one of those meetings for many months now. So Dr. Fauci is essentially saying, you know, he's the man who warned of this second wave of COVID-19 in the autumn, all the way back in the spring when people were saying, well, once the warmer weather arrives, it'll be gone. And Dr. Fauci said, no, a second wave is utterly unavoidable. And indeed, now the colder weather is set in and respiratory diseases are beginning to spread again, we are seeing that he was absolutely right about that. President Trump, as you know, has a very complicated relationship with Anthony Fauci. He keeps saying publicly that Dr. Fauci is a good guy, that he's given the president wrong advice in the past, because Dr. Fauci initially, very, very early on in the pandemic, said that he didn't think people should be wearing face masks. One of the reasons he said that is because that there weren't enough face masks to go round, and he wanted to make sure that frontline medical workers were able to get their hands on them. But yes, he did eventually change his mind and say that he thought that in the interests of public health, everybody should be wearing them. But he's got a complicated relationship with President Trump because he espouses the kind of control of the pandemic that President Trump simply disagrees with. The president thinks the economy needs to be reopened. He clearly thinks, from everything he said over the last couple of days, that most of the people catching COVID-19 are in very low-risk categories, are very unlikely to succumb to the virus, and that the economy of the United States needs to be open in order to thrive. That's just a radically different approach to the pandemic than public health officials like Dr. Fauci espouse. They think that this idea of herd immunity is kind of voodoo science. They think that you've got to bring this disease under control to some extent in order to protect the healthcare system in the United States and make sure that it doesn't get overrun with really serious cases in intensive care units. So they are at odds, and yet Donald Trump doesn't seem willing to fire him. He's got a very peculiar relationship. I mean, there's a sense in which Donald Trump, I think, recognizes that Dr. Fauci is highly respected here in Washington, has been part of the furniture here, serving Republican and Democrat presidents alike for four decades, and that it would be very, very difficult, I think, for the president at this stage to move against him. So he kind of tolerates him, but largely ignores the advice he gives. And Dr. Fauci says, look, I'm just here to provide scientific advice. I'm going to give it straight as an arrow. And I think everybody should be wearing face masks, which is, of course, the approach espoused by President Trump's rival, Joe Biden.
Yeah, and I guess adding weight to Dr. Fauci's, words is this new modeling study, Simon, from the University of Washington's Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation. It says that if 95% of Americans wore masks in public, more than 100,000 lives could be saved through February, and I guess through the cold period now coming up.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, some of the models that we're looking at show that, you know, we've had 225,000 deaths here now. It's perfectly possible that within the course of the next 6, 9, 12 months, we'll see the same number of deaths again. And indeed, one would think that it would be highly likely. I mean, while therapeutics are advancing and a vaccine is presumably at some point going to emerge, possibly more than one, this is still a very dangerous disease to populations with comorbidities, pre-existing conditions. We know that it disproportionately impacts the Black community here in the United States and the Hispanic community here in the United States. There are connections between socioeconomic circumstances and COVID-19. And, you know, in the absence of any kind of national strategy, and that's not a criticism of President Trump. he would concede he does not have a national strategy because he simply doesn't think there is a workable national strategy to deal with a virus that exhibits itself in different intensities in various parts of the country. But in the absence of a national strategy, it's very, very difficult to see how you're going to avoid embracing numbers like that in the weeks and months ahead. And that suggests that the United States is still going to be very much the worst impacted country from this virus by a very long chalk. And it's going to pose all sorts of problems for whoever the next president of the United States is, whether it's Donald Trump being given four more years or Joe Biden and Kamala Harris moving into the White House at the end of January.
Simon, as always, thank you so much for speaking to us here in Singapore, keeping us updated from what's happening over your way, and have a great week.
Thanks, Justine. Talk to you next week.